This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, someone I work with every day. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today, discussion. And, you know, this show should hit on a number of different topics, or will hit on a number of different topics involving interagency contracting and what's going on with regard to strategic sourcing, all those kind of things. But first, Carolyn, I wanted to touch on the GSA Schedules Program, and in particular, the coalition issued and prepared and provided publicly a white paper on GSA schedule pricing policy and made some findings and recommendations. And I'd like to talk about that if we can for this segment. So, first of all, what is the white paper and why was it done, or what sparked it?
Okay. Well, Roger, you know that the GSA schedule program is an interest to most of our membership. And over the past couple of years since I've been with the coalition, we've been in a continuing dialogue with GSA about the program and about its pricing policy. And early on, when I first joined the coalition, we had a conference, and one of our speakers was the Director of Acquisition Policy from GSA. And after an exchange where it became clear that there were some great differences between the way GSA perceived the program and the way industry perceived it, he suggested that if industry had some views that they'd like for GSA to consider, that we submit them to him in writing. And that was the genesis of the white paper.
Right. And it's particularly, you know, the timing is everything, right? I mean, I think, mm-hmm. if I recall, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that GSA is looking at rewriting the regulations?
Yes, and that's why it was a particularly good time for us to have the white paper. You'll remember that more than a year ago, GSA had proposed rewriting the entire General Services Acquisition Regulation, and the chapter of the regulation that applies to the schedules pricing, 538, was a part of that. GSA had gone all the way through the rulemaking process and gotten up to the point where we expected a final change to come out, and that regulation was basically pulled almost a year ago now, with an indication from GSA that they would start over again with 538 and rewrite the portions that related to the MAS pricing policy. So it was a really opportune time for us as an association to provide input to GSA so that they could use it as intelligence in redrafting 538 again.
Okay, so well then it is a great timing is everything. And so why don't you talk a little bit about some of the findings and recommendations?
Okay. You know, we started a working group to review the MAS pricing policy. And after many discussions, it became clear that the pricing policy was no longer current. The original GSA MAS pricing was back. The last major rewrite was in the 90s, and that was really a refinement of a policy that was from the 80s. So since that time, there are many things that have changed, both in industry, where the way companies go to market on pricing commercial items has changed dramatically, and even on the government side, there has been about several versions of changes to the MAS ordering procedures increasingly increasingly enhance the competition requirements.
At the order level.
At the order level.
Let me think now, 1980s, where there wasn't an internet, if I recall, right?
No.
Right, and this weekend I had to go replace yet another phone for one of my children, and there weren't, you know, mobile phones or desktop computer or any of the infrastructure, information infrastructure that are that's available today. I mean,
that's right.
Fundamentally changed the way companies operate in the commercial marketplace.
It's fundamentally changed the way companies operate. It's fundamentally changed the way that agencies are required to communicate their requirements. But despite those fundamental changes, they have not been reflected in the MAS pricing.
Right.
Well, modules.
And isn't it one of, doesn't that lead to, or, you know, I know I've heard you talk many times about the lack of clarity in the regulations. When you're talking about a regulation that's fundamentally built on a 1980s platform in terms of the way it, where the market was and, you know, products were the vast majority of things that people were acquiring versus today, it's more services and technology. You know, trying to fill in those gray areas or where the lack of clarity is gets people in trouble and makes for more difficult discussions between government industry. Is that fair to say?
I think there's a lot left unsaid in the MAS pricing policy. I think there's a lot left unsaid in a lot of regulations. But what makes those the gaps palatable is when both parties understand what the program is trying to do. And I think that now there's really a gap in understanding what the MAS policy is trying to do. I think that GSA contracting people, industry people, customers all go into to interpret what's in the gap, and they're all finding different interpretations, which makes things like negotiating a contract extremely difficult.
Okay, and, so, and that increases risk, compliance risk. For if there's a lack of clarity, it increases performance risk and, you know, compliance risk, right?
Well, it does, and because just the inconsistencies increase the cost and the risk because contractors are often left to implement infrastructure for more than one interpretation of the rule, which just duplicates costs across the board.
So that's a great point because there could be one interpretation out of one part of GSA contracting offices and a, you know, 180 degree different interpretation out of another office that handles a different schedule.
Absolutely.
And that, so you've got almost create two sets of compliance infrastructure to deal with two different interpretations from a single entity.
Yeah.
Right?
And that was one of the whole purposes of the multiple award schedule policy, even though it it is supposedly one policy that spans all of the various services and products that you can get from the program. And one policy will reduce risk and cost not only for industry, but for the government itself.
Is one of those areas that creates a lot of confusion, most favored customer, that terminology?
Absolutely. There's always been some lack of clarity over what most favored customer meant. But I think that those differences get to be, are expanding now, rather than narrowing the areas of inconsistency and lack of understanding are expanding.
Right. And so can you start to talk a little bit about what some of the recommendations that the white paper makes?
Sure. The first recommendation is that they delete the term most favorite customer.
Hey, there you go.
And that takes away.
That would clarify things, right? So what would you do in its place or what's the paper describe as an alternative?
Well, you know, if you take the term most favorite customer out of the pricing policy and just read it by itself, it's a reasonable pricing standard because basically the government would direct contractors and direct its own contracting officers to look at how a company sells to its customers and then to negotiate prices that are reasonable for the government compared to customers that look like the government.
Right. So, and what, so what you're saying is that, that using that language, most favored customer, it's almost like a disconnect between the underlying regulations that create the formula for negotiating prices. Is
that
right?
The formula, I think, is solid in the regulation. It is the term most favored customer, and directing, you know, in its most extreme interpretation, it directs government contracting officers to negotiate the best price that a contractor sells. And you and I both know that the terms under which the government buys are so dramatically different than the
right.
terms that a company's truly best customer gets, that it's an unrealistic
expectation.
Pricing negotiation.
Right. And Carolina, we do have to, speaking of customers, we have to take a break and, you know, sell. So, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Carolyn Alston. She is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we'll go down through some of the other recommendations of the Coalition's white paper on GSA schedule pricing. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
CACI delivers innovative information solutions and services to serve America's highest priorities, advancing efficiency and performance with business systems, countering the effects of complex threats with integrated security solutions, providing healthcare solutions for better, more affordable care, defending the nation against cyber threats, and helping veterans with its award-winning career-building program. CACI. Information deployed, solutions advanced. Missions accomplished. CACI, ever vigilant.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. She is the Executive Vice President, General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, someone I see every day, or talk to at least every day, every workday. So, Carolyn, when we took the break, you just started going through some of the recommendations that the white paper made with regard to the pricing policy, and you talked about most favored customer. First, are you done on that one?
Yes, I think.
Okay, so
what are you?
Okay, yes. can you talk about some of the other recommendations?
Yeah, sure. Two that I think are significant. The first is eliminate the price reduction clause. You know, we at the Coalition have surveyed our members about the cost of the price reduction clause. And of all of the provisions in the government contract, I think the price reduction clause is one that is the most costly and probably the least needed in the MAS contract. In our last segment, we were talking about the changes that have occurred in government contracting. One of those changes is that there is a lot of competition at the task order stage. There's a lot of customizing of prices in with respect to the commercial segments of contractors' business. So when you have that type of competition, you do not need a government-unique tool to further decrease the pricing. If you let competition work, the prices will go down. The price reduction clause attempts to drive prices down, but it does it in a way that is very costly to government and industry and basically no longer needed because of the changes that have occurred in the task order buying rules.
Right. The task order, the requirement for competition for all orders over
orders over $150,000 have to be competed. And in the services sector, it's even lower dollars than that, because anytime you need basically to go out and do a request for proposals,
right,
you need to get competition from the scheduled contract holders.
So competition for specific requirements is driving the pricing at the order level, where the price reduction clause is really, it's a oversight mechanism that, you know, tries pricing to completely unrelated pricing transactions in the private sector.
Right, exactly.
So in your view, does a price reduction clause actually have the potential to restrict competition for a company?
Oh yeah, I think so. We've seen that because the price reduction clause is tied to a particular commercial contractor, a company has to monitor that that customer and have many fail-safe mechanisms before they can offer pricing to that customer. And I think even the government is recognizing that it is anti-competitive, because in a major procurement, GSA waived application of portions of the price reduction clause to allow one of its customers to do a separate IDIQ contract.
Right, and because that clause was limiting the ability of some of the competitors to compete for the contracts, as I understand
it. It limited the ability of the competitor to even lower its price to the government. So because of the contractor's concern of the penalties under the price reduction clause. So, you know, it's really kind of difficult for people who are not into the nuts and bolts of the contract to understand. But I think that a waiver by GSA of his own price reduction provisions
to further
customer.
Right, to further competition.
Speaks volumes about the clause itself.
Right. Okay. So you have eliminate most favored customer language. You have eliminate the price reduction clause. Other recommendations?
The third recommendation that I think is really significant, we can't claim ownership of. We went back and looked at some of the major studies of the multiple award schedule by other separate panels, and we looked at the SARA panel's recommendation on GSA on commercial item contracting. And the SARA panel, which was composed of both government and industry, recommended that GSA pilot test a different type of pricing mechanism under a schedule where there would be little if no negotiation of prices at the contract level and increased competition at the task order level. And we've recommended that GSA consider this approach for professional services and IT contracts.
Okay, so you got all those recommendations. What, you know, in your view, what's the outcome? How is that a better contracting program as a result? I think it's the big question, right?
The outcome is a streamlined contracting process that allows more contractors to offer commercial solutions at the GSA contract level. And I think that plays out well for GSA customers, because agencies have increasingly complex requirements and they need streamlined ways to get to quality providers of goods and services. The more that GSA can streamline its contract process and open that contracting vehicle up to commercial item contractors, I think the better it is for GSA customers and federal taxpayers.
Right. It focuses. It's a framework that then creates a marketplace where contractors and customer agencies can do business. Right. Yeah. You know, compete for requirements and seek solutions if you're the customer agency.
Yeah. And I think in so many ways we're seeing that the value of GSA is in creating that marketplace. GSA does not have, if you look at across the scheme of things, most of the actual requirements are not GSA requirements. They don't hold the requirements. So I think that the best thing that GSA can do for the federal government is to create a marketplace where agencies, when they have actual requirements, have access to quality providers of that service and then can use the program to leverage at the task order level.
Okay. And on that, you know, since we're talking about requirements a little bit, let's turn to a little bit to strategic sourcing.
Okay.
What's the latest on strategic? What are some of the initiatives ongoing right now?
Okay. GSA and Office of Federal Procurement Policy had announced some time ago that there were going to be like five strategic sourcing initiatives that they wanted to deliver in 2013. GSA has on the street a strategic sourcing initiatives for
janitorial supply and supplies and sanitation supply. Right. Is that the right terminology? And then
yes.
MRO too. Is that one of them?
Yes.
What's that? Maintenance, repair,
and operations. So they have moved forward with both of those. Proposals are due in early December. Okay. GSA is also working on the next generation of their office supply initiatives. So that's three. And I think, and of course, OASIS is already out, which is not technically strategic sourcing, but is often talked about in the same context.
Right. And they did the mobile device.
Yes, the mobile device.
Strategic sourcing mm-hmm. through BPA. So how are they right now for Janssen and MRO? Are those done through this GSA schedules or what? How is it structured?
Janssen and MRO are structured through the schedules program, and they incorporate many of the elements of the original office supply strategic sourcing, which means that they are government-wide, very generic statement of requirements.
Multiple award, right?
Multiple award, no real volume commitment, and very heavy requirements for data collection.
Right. And Carolyn, we have to take our next break. See how fast this goes? Wow. Yeah. But when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of strategic sourcing with Carolyn Austin. She is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is an important time for the federal government, a chance for agencies to do things differently. How will you help shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, and turn resolve into results, so you can see what's possible and make it happen. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Austin. She is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn, when we took the last break, we were talking about strategic sourcing and some of the characteristics. And you described the Janssen and MRO, BPA strategy off schedules that is being used. And I guess, earlier in that segment, you made the point about GSA is not a requirements holder, but more of a market maker. How does that sort of play out in the Janssen, MRO, strategic sourcing initiatives? What does that mean? What does, from a practical perspective, what do you see there? What does that mean?
Well, I think that GSA in all of its strategic sourcing is behaving like it is both a market maker and the holder of the requirements. And in fact, they are not holders of the requirement, and that's what leads to a lot of problems with industry trying to respond to their requirements. I think that, a long time ago, we did a white paper on a different topic, and one of the things that came out of it was that the members had concluded that the closer you are to the requirement, the more you know about a requirement is the biggest driver for pricing for the companies who respond. So
that makes sense to me.
Okay. But when you look at the Janssen and other strategic sourcing initiatives, the contractors basically do not know any more about the requirement than when they bid at the multiple award schedule for the multiple award schedule contract. They don't know where the items are going. They don't know what specific items are going to be purchased. And right. So it is
or when they're going to be purchased during the year and all those kind of things.
Yep. And at the same time, the BPAs layer on requirements that are not even in the underlying contract.
Like data reporting.
So in those cases, that's why I said GSA is theoretically they're acting like they have the requirements when they actually do not, where they have information they actually do not. And if you look behind some of the information that's given in the Janssen, you'll see that there are letters of commitment, which you say, okay, that's good. Customers have committed. But then when you look to what they have committed to, it is very little. Most of the letters have conditional language in them. And if you look at what their total spend is compared to what their the spend that they anticipate on the JanSan is a huge discrepancy.
Right. So what is a conditional commitment? That to me sounds like it's predicated on certain conditions being met, right? Obviously, right?
Yeah, but the conditions to be met are not clear.
Right. And it's so not, it depends on the agency,
yeah,
basically, right?
Yeah, I think the agencies are looking to see if this is something that's really good for me, then I'll use it. But if it's not.
Right.
You know.
And so, like, I think in the case of one, like, Department of Army, it's, they can, quote, conditionally commit to 1 to 3 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. But their addressable spend, and these are documents in the JanSan, mm-hmm. is about $150 million right. or so.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a disconnect there. I mean, it goes to your point about who holds a requirement, right?
Yes, it does. Now, I think that, you know, having said these things that sound very critical of the program, one of the things that I think is very good is that they are using the multiple award schedule as the framework for the initiative. I personally, and I think it's more than personally, we've looked at what best practices are. And from the coalition standpoint, we are advocating use of the GSA schedules by the agencies, but have the agencies do their own BPAs because it is the agencies that have specific requirements about the spend, about what they want to buy, and who actually have all the tools to have incentives internally to use those vehicles. So that's the way we think that the
right.
program should be used.
So in a certain sense, these generic BPAs are basically, in the long run, will limit competition for agency-specific requirements because it's kind of, you're talking about long-term supply chain implications if you're going to limit the strategic sourcing BPAs to a small number of contractors,
mm-hmm.
Locking out other commercial firms and that sort of thing. Is that one of the big concerns?
Yeah, absolutely. Maintaining a viable supply chain is huge concern, I think, not only for industry, but for government, too, because when the agencies need a particular contractor, they want to be able to have access to it, which is one reason why we have taken such a hard position on closing schedules after strategic sourcing initiatives, because it freezes those contractors who are able to participate. And the contractors who are not a part of the BPAs are often left at making analysis of whether there's enough business to make it viable for them to stay in the market.
Right. So, and it's really not a question of, from a taxpayer's perspective, I'm a taxpayer, you're mm-hmm. a taxpayer. It's like, we want the government to get a better deal.
Yeah.
We just think a better deal is accomplished closer to the actual requirements holder than some sort of amorphous, top-down, government-wide approach.
Well, and as a taxpayer, a better deal has to mean more to me than a price that goes down 5%. I mean,
right, it's more than just price.
You want right. a system that's going to cost the government less to run, and that's
right.
what we're talking about.
Right. So what do you say to folks who may respond by saying, well, you know, won't you create duplicative BPAs across the government if you're telling everybody to go do their strategic sourcing BPAs?
It's going to be fewer transactions than if everybody goes out to try to create their own vehicle because they're not satisfied
right.
with the government-wide BPA. And it's fewer transactions than there are now with every requirement over $150,000 being required to be competed.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other thoughts on strategic sourcing and the directions that's going before we go to our next topic?
Well, the one thing that concerns our members on the next big one coming up is what is called OS3, which is the third generation of the office supply contract, because we are hearing in that initiative that GSA is actually considering moving away from the GSA schedule, which to us is just more contract duplication.
Right. And why would they move away from it?
Strangely enough, I think they're moving away to avoid some of the problems in the MAS pricing policy that we were talking about at the beginning of our segment. I think that after the first OS3, the market was closed, so that now when they're going out for OS 3, the question is everybody in play that could be in play for this to compete on this transaction? And some companies have not are not present on the GSA schedule contract because
the contract GSA closed the schedule
because it was closed. And also, now if you're going to have both schedule contractors and non-schedule contractors compete, the schedule contractors will really be at a disadvantage because of clauses like the price reduction clause that are a part of their multiple award schedule.
So the irony here is the fact that GSA closed the office supply schedule to new offers is leading to contract duplication through the potential creation of a whole competing contract program to the schedules.
Right. But now GSA, as far as we know, has not made a formal decision to go that way, and we hope that they will not.
Right. Okay, Carolyn. And you know what? We're up on our last break. But so when we come back, we'll be talking more to Carolyn Alston. She is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we may touch on some other some practices and increased costs. We'll also take a moment to talk a little bit about the Coalition's Fall Conference, which took place on October 30th this year. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn, we're on to our last segment. And you know, here I might just try to give you an opportunity to provide some thoughts on three or four key issues or key practices that increase transactional costs for the government. And you know, your thoughts on those, and then touch briefly on the fall conference towards the end of the show. But so first one, I'm going to do like word associate or just get your thoughts. Contract duplication.
Okay.
Thoughts.
As one of the major concerns of our members, and it's because every time contracts are duplicated, companies feel that they must respond, and that means because if they don't, they will be left out of any opportunities for that particular part of the market, and that drives up cost. If you have to respond in three different ways to offer the same goods and services, it's going to drive up your costs.
Right. So, and to your point, the companies do feel like if somebody's putting together agency-wide multiple award IDIQ for IT services, you know, I've got to compete for that, or I'm maybe locked out of that market.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, they turn around, people don't use those contracts. So it does.
And I think, and the government has a pretty wide suite of contracts that are in existence and are government-wide. The GSA schedules are there, of course, but also there are a number of GWAC, government-wide acquisition contracts that are available in the IT and professional services market that also are very good sources of
Right. Well, the NASA agencies. SUPE's in the midst of its, you know, recompete, its latest version. NIH and COSP3, their contract family, and then there's GSA's with Alliant and Alliant Small Business, and you know, now they're, you know, doing Oasis as well, and you have the schedules there too. I mean, it seems like there's plenty of opportunities already to be part of the federal marketplace and, you know, compete under those contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been a lot of like discussion, and I'll throw this one at you. A little curveball, but you know, these multiple award contracts, there's some detractors who say they're anti-competitive, and I just want to get your thoughts on that. I don't quite understand the theory, because if you awarded one contract, it seems to me that be even more anti-competitive than IDIQ, as opposed to a bunch of IDIQs where you then compete subsequent orders.
Now, I don't understand the argument that they're anti-competitive. I mean, generally, they're open at the beginning. They're open to anybody that wants to compete. I mean, that's whether it's the GWACs or the multiple award schedule. And then most of them, I believe, provide on-ramp, on and off-ramps for contractors during the periods of the contract. For example, in the GSA Schedules program, they're still open season contracts.
At least for right now.
Yes, for right now. And we hopefully for the continued future, any contractor that's capable can come in and submit an offer.
Right. And it seems like if you go back to back in the early 90s for IT in particular, you would spend 2 years trying to award one contract, one IDIQ contract that would then last 10 years.
Right.
And the technology would change, on the contract the day after it was awarded because it was all outdated because it took you 2 years to put it in place. And then they're locked into that market for the next 10 years as a company.
Exactly.
So I don't quite understand it myself, but it is, something that we're hearing more about, which, I think the alternative is significantly worse. Mm-hmm. Another one I wanted to ask you about is this idea of putting commercial back in commercial item contracting.
Yeah, I think certainly in my career, one of the concepts that has reduced obstacles to entering the government market is the use of commercial items. Because contractors can basically offer to government agencies the same products and services that they offer to their commercial customers. But what we are seeing is the layering on of so many government unique terms. You could still offer the same products if you could work your way through all of the government unique terms and conditions, and it's making it more difficult to introduce items into the commercial market.
And would one of those things be like the price reduction clause?
Absolutely.
Right.
Number
is that, one. Yeah. And there's companies there who are not offering the latest technologies because they can't comply with the clause.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So another area, your thoughts, data reporting, is it out of control? What's the lay of the land there?
It certainly seems to be out of control. I mean, because contractors are being asked to give lots of transactional data. And if the transactional data was the same thing that they provided, that they collected commercially, it would be one thing. But there are some, and our members continue to tell us that there are some elements that they don't even capture commercially. So if you're talking about big systems changes within contractors to capture data that would then in turn have to be reported to the government. And one of the frustrating things for people outside of the government is that seemingly the government has this information already, and the government could, instead of looking to contractors, they could look internally for ways of capturing that information from their various agencies.
Well, I think the government sees it as a cost avoidance. If you have somebody else do it, it's not, I don't have to do it. I'm not paying for it.
But that's not going to be cost avoidance because eventually somebody is going to have to pay. So if the cost goes up to contractors, they're going to look to ways to pass it on to their customers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So those are the ones I wanted to touch on. And so the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, and we have a couple minutes left, is, the Coalition's fall conference. Could you just run through some of the highlights there?
Yeah, I think even the title of the conference, that's the new federal market, I think both government and industry is looking around to try to decide what is this new market. I think that the budget cuts are dramatically affecting everybody. They're looking around to see what is the new norm in the federal market, and how is that going to impact exactly what the government is buying and how the government's buying. In the best of all worlds, it drives innovation to try to look for new efficiencies. But right now, I think there's so many uncertainties that it's almost, people are kind of almost like deer in the headlight,
what's next,
what's going to be next.
Yeah.
So the coalition was trying to help define what is going to be next. And we had a great lineup of people throughout from across the government to come in and to give their perspective on that. We had Frank Kendall, who's Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, to come in and talk about the DOD perspective. We had Major General Wendy Masiello to come in and talk specifically about Air Force contracting. And as you know, DOD is the big buyer on the block. So our members were very interested in that. We had a panel of people from the Hill, and we had a panel of CFOs to come in and each give their perspective on what the market is going to look like and to give some intelligence to industry so that they would know how to best serve their federal customers.
Right. And then there were breakout sessions where we talk, get very operational as yeah. well. Is that so? It's sort of a balance between the strategic big picture and, you know, like sort of the boots on the ground and what's going
yeah.
on.
And right? I think the coalition is the best at boots on the ground. We try to follow acquisitions that are specific interest to our members. We try to invite people in from the government who are involved in those acquisitions so that they can share information. And I think that our conference is particularly valuable with the decrease in the number of industry days and the outreach from the government on these particular topics. I think the coalition plays a very valuable role in being able to bring industry and government together so that they can communicate on these major issues of concern.
Well, hey, thanks for communicating with me today, Carolyn. It's been great, but we do have to close the show. But just one last thought I throw out there, listeners. You know, it seems to me that the focus on the new federal market, getting back to focusing on improving requirements development and how needs are articulated to potential competitors is the key to saving money in the long run. The procurement system has all kinds of tools already in existence that provide flexibility from a contracting type perspective. You know, if there could be two things to be done, it improve requirements development and improve communication between government industry in a streamlined, you know, sort of discussion process. That's where I think the focus on better value for the American people is. But with that, I want to thank my guest, Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.